Welcome to the Back in the Day podcast with the Metro Archives. I'd like to thank everyone for listening today. I'm Sarah Arntz, the program coordinator for Metro Archives, and I have researcher Bob Henderson with us today. Our topic is none other than Nashville's own aviatrix, proper way to say that word, Cornelia Fort. But before we get into our questions, here's a brief bio about Bob. Bob Henderson is a former naval flight officer and Air National Guard veteran with a passion for aviation history and genealogy. After serving in P-3 Orion missions and flying C-130 Hercules in global operations, including the Gulf War, Bosnia airlifts, and El Salvador peace efforts, he developed a deep interest in military and family history. His research spans from World War II aviation to Nashville's forgotten figures. His current interests are the unsung heroes of Nashville. The top four are Cornelia Fort, Cornelia Barksdale, the 105th Squadron, and Jack Harding. Bob has worked with Metro Archives many times in the past, including rescanning the Walter Williams Aerials collection and collaborating with us to create last year's Magellans of the Air exhibit about the first flight that circumnavigated the globe. Through storytelling, he bridges incredible tales of bravery, sacrifice, and legacy to life. With that, let's get started. So, Bob, I shortened your bio you sent me, so do tell us, especially if I got any of that wrong.
No, Sarah, that was spot on. I didn't want to talk too much, but the background is, I guess, the connection to some of these events is what ties me to it and what motivated me to get into this. But first of all, I'd like to thank the Archives for, like I said, letting me loose in this place for the last 2 years. Former director Ken Feith was... just gave me a great amount of latitude to do and seek what I wanted and just kind of go with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it started, I guess, with Bosnia. I was really not very well educated in history, especially in high school. Got a good course at Belmont, but we had done the airlift into El Salvador with the generals to settle that war. And then off to Bosnia in 94. And I realized that I knew more about these other civil wars than I knew about our own. Mm-hmm. And my brother gave me the book, The Decisive Battle of Nashville. I read it on the way over to Germany in one setting, which is rare for me. And it just came alive. And so it started with that. And then fast forward to 2020 in COVID, I spent a lot of time at Brown's Diner because they were demolishing one of the two streetcars that restaurant's made out of. And actually have some of it in my house. And I thought, I need to see what it looked like back then. And I remember that my brother had helped Ken get these Walter Williams collection or aerial pictures in here. So I came down looking for that. Never did. Mm-hmm. But it opened up all these other amazing stories. And at the end of it, it was Jack Harding, the first world flight. And through the investigation of that, I looked every piece of aviation history I could find, and I knew about Cornelia already.
Mm-hmm. She's pretty famous, yeah.
So that was kind of the catalyst for the whole thing.
Okay. And you were in the Navy, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
I was in the P-3 Orion was primarily a anti-submarine warfare platform. Mm-hmm. Our mission, the main mission, if there was a Third World War, were targeting nuclear submarines. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, by the time I became proficient in that platform, the secrets got out to the Soviets that they were able to make their submarines as quiet as ours.
And
that changed the game for us. So we ended up doing drug interdiction and search and rescue and just flying around big grids of water and looking for ships and taking pictures of them. And then the Berlin Wall came down, which dissolved that community almost to nothing. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the Bosnian Gulf War was on the horizon. A lot of people were retiring early, and they had some slots open, and I was tired of driving to Millington, Tennessee for the Navy Reserve. Mm-hmm. So I transferred in right before that, and we thought we were going over. Some of us did, but it ended so fast. And then towards the end, I had a four-year obligation with them. Bosnia was coming up, and I volunteered for that because I wanted to go out with some major contribution, and that's a whole other story.
Gotcha. Okay, so well, I guess getting into the topic we're working with here with Cornelia, tell us a little bit about the research you've done with her and the connection that you've got.
The family connection goes back to probably the 20s and 30s. My grandfather's older brother, J.B. Henderson, was the president of the Southwestern Company, and they had the farm next to Fortland, which was called Wild Acres.
Mm-hmm.
He was a pilot. His three sons were a pilot, and even his youngest daughter became a pilot much later.
Hmm.
The boys, I haven't analyzed the dates, but I suspect they were probably a little bit older than Dr. Fortz.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Cornelia was watching this as a little girl. And that might be the reason that Dr. Ford pulled out the family Bible and had the three sons swear never to fly. Cornelia is about 5 years old at this mm-hmm. time, and she's hanging at the door listening to this whole thing, and he didn't think to make her
mm-hmm.
give the same oath.
Yeah, I think I read that somewhere that the brother made the comment to her when she wanted to start flying. He's like, wait a minute, Dad said we couldn't do that. She's like, she said you couldn't do that.
Exactly. And I think it's said that she took her first, well, the catalyst was a friend of hers was dating a pilot, and he invited her and Cornelia to go up, and that was the hook. She probably already thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
The friend hated it, and mm-hmm. Cornelia loved it, but she started taking lessons, I think, within weeks or months of her father's death in 1940.
I was wondering when he passed. Okay. Gotcha.
So she didn't challenge him while he was on this earth. I read somewhere that she was buried somewhere else, but I went out. She's at Mount Olivet.
Okay.
In the family cemetery.
That's what I thought. I think when I saw her mother passed in, I think I wrote it down somewhere. It's 71, maybe? I can't remember. I believe she was going to be buried there as well. So, my goodness. And who did you mention where her dad worked? National Life?
He was a doctor for National Life, and I'm still researching that because my family, on my mother's side, the Beardens were involved in the early beginnings, Walter Scott Bearden Jr. And we'll come back to this later, but I do have some interesting comments about that company and the connection to the community. But he was a doctor. It was called National Accident and Sick Company, I think, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Life insurance, apparently, wasn't part of the original mix. It was insurance for primarily blue-collar workers
mm-hmm.
To pay their bills if they were disabled.
Okay.
I saw it referenced as streetcar insurance
mm-hmm.
somewhere. And
oh, wow.
But it was, I think it was just as accident insurance in the beginning. But he was a doctor, so maybe he would, you know, be the one to inspect the mm-hmm. the injured party. And
mm-hmm.
But he ended up being the president and owner.
Oh, of National Life?
As I understand it.
Okay. Yeah, the bio I was reading said he was the founder, but we don't know that for sure. We just know he worked for him and then became president.
I saw it was formed in 1900. In 1901, the book by Simbeck, was it, the author,
mm-hmm.
Said that a man by the last name of Craig bought it in 01. It was almost insolvent.
Oh, wow. Goodness. My. Huh. Okay. So what can you tell about her upbringing with her schooling and whatnot, where she went to school?
The Forts were probably the top of the heap of the society. The wife was actually from Boston.
Okay.
But she was very well-educated and refined, and she was taken in to the fold of the Southern Gentile Society, and he was a highly respected member as well. So she grew up with the Blue Bloods.
Mm.
Of course, you know, before Belle Meade, East Nashville was where all the money was in the big homes until the massive fire that took it out and the real estate development that developed Belle Meade. But apparently the city of Nashville itself was just disgusting. The roads were horrible. There was soot everywhere
mm-hmm.
With the coal. And so they wanted a place not too far, but you could take the streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
Remember those?
Oh, yes. I actually kind of wish we still had them, but, you know.
They could take the streetcar all the way to Shelby Park, which was right across the river from mm-hmm. Portland, which was about, I think, 300 acres, 250, 300 acres. Mm-hmm. But she was a blue blood. But Dr. Fort insisted on them going to public schools for their elementary education.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, after that, Cornelia went to Ward Belmont, the finishing school for young ladies. And I know my great uncle's sons went to a Peabody demonstration school, and they had a chauffeur that shuttled them back and forth. And I haven't looked at it, but I bet you her brothers probably went there or MBA.
Maybe. Okay.
Probably MBA, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she goes on, you said, to Ward Belmont. And then after that, what school did we say she attended?
Well, it says in Wikipedia that she did go to Sarah Lawrence, and she wanted to go to Sarah Lawrence first.
Mm-hmm.
But her father was a very domineering individual, and especially with the sons. They had to work their tails off on the farm.
Wow.
He knew the power of, you know, of work, and so she probably didn't have to do as much. But the... so she was. She wanted to go to Sarah Lawrence. The academics appealed to her more. Dr. Ford didn't like it. He thought it was too liberal, maybe. He wanted her to go to Ognitz. Is that the pronunciation?
Yeah, it sounded like that. That's what it was. Yeah. I believe Amelia Earhart apparently attended there.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I remember reading that, and I'm sure that was an influence as well. Now, I couldn't find the book this morning, but I thought I remember reading that it was a military school
couldn't figure out. All it said was that it, I think it's no longer in existence. I think the land is now part of some school near Penn State, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, but it said it was for prominent families, something like that. So, fits.
Well, they cut a deal. I think he said, Dr. Fort said, if she'd go there for a year, he would consider transfer to Sarah Lawrence. And that's what happened, but when she got there, it was not, they didn't agree necessarily to take her credits from the previous college, and they didn't. And she did not graduate from Sarah Lawrence's, according to the book, but in Wikipedia it says that she did, and came back to Nashville, and that's when, you know, apparently not too long after that, she got the ride in the plane that sparked the rest of it.
That's kind of interesting. As a kid, she sees some daredevil out there flying, so it sparks it then. But then years later, fate kind of intervenes.
Well, and backstory of that, too, is, you know, the U.S. had pretty much disassembled their air service.
Mm-hmm.
And you had all these Jennies flying around, and they were doing a lot of stunts trying to... You know, do air shows started to become very popular. We've got some pictures of those.
Yeah.
From the 30s. It looks like probably 10, 20,000 people all around the tarmac out at B&A.
Oh, wow.
So she was exposed to a lot of that.
Yeah.
And could see it from where they lived.
As a young kid, just throughout her life, pretty much, she was exposed to that? Okay.
Yeah, because they, 1924 First World Flight was a Nashvillian.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Harding was one of the most famous men on the planet, and he was certainly the spokesperson of the crowd, and they even made a comic book series called Smiling Jack.
Good old Smiling Jack, yeah.
He was quite the gentleman.
Yeah. So, yeah, I never really thought about that connection, but with him being from here, I mean, back in, we're talking Nashville 1940s, how big was Nashville then? So I'm sure, yeah, that might have been an influence for sure.
And Jimmy Doolittle, the famous Tokyo Raider, I think maybe you put a picture of recently at Blackwood Field that he was down here.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Arnold was from Nashville Aviator, who Andrews Air Force Base is named for.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Hoover. I don't know why I didn't know this. He was in our squadron, the 105th.
Oh, really?
Is how he started.
Okay.
And went on to be a World War II fighter pilot, test pilot, and probably the most famous air show pilot of all time. Jimmy Doolittle said he was the best stick and rudder man that he'd ever seen.
Oh, wow. Okay, I guess for layman's terms, explain that one.
A stick and rudder is the stick that you use to control the pitch and the roll.
Okay.
And the rudder goes, you know, side to side. So that was the term they used for somebody that really could stick it. And he had, I saw this once. He used to fly P-51 Mustangs in air shows. He did a 5-point roll with no engine, with the engines off. You can see it on YouTube. It was absolutely stupefying.
Oh, my.
He was just an amazing pilot, but he started here. He went to school somewhere in East Nashville. I forgot the name of it. Mm-hmm. And we've got a great picture of him in the collection as a young 20-something-year-old with his leather flight suit.
My goodness.
He was good buddies with Chuck Yeager. Mm. Everybody worshipped him, and it still does in the aviation community.
Oh, wow. Goodness.
So most aviators in Nashville know about Cornelia Fort, and surprisingly, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, locals do too, but it's amazing how these stories just never expanded. And, you know, to tie a couple of them together, Jack Harding, mm-hmm. Cornelia Barksdale, we'll talk about in a little bit, Cornelia mm-hmm. Fort, they have one thing in common. They left Nashville and never came back. And I think that partially explains maybe the reason they were forgotten. They didn't run for office, you know, mm-hmm. they didn't self-promote themselves. And after time, it just, it kind of went away. So I think, you know, we deserve a better understanding of our own local history. Mm-hmm. It certainly enriches it beyond just the music industry.
For sure. I think with every patron request that I get, hearing about families like this, that you can see connections through marriage, if somebody were to take the time and do like a big Nashville family genealogy connection, I swear you could do like 7 degrees of starting with something with National Life, because every single time I research somebody, it seems like it always traces back to National Life.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that some more?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So the insurance business, I've done a little bit of research on this because my family connection to it. I looked at insurance companies in general in the United States. Before the Civil War, there were about 30 or 40. Mm-hmm. Within a decade or two, it exploded to at least 400. Mm-hmm. And there were 2 or 3 or 4 Civil War generals, including John Bell Hood, who was mm-hmm. in charge of the Battle of Nashville on the Confederate side, getting into the insurance business. James Longstreet of Lee's mm-hmm. Army got in the business. Seems like maybe Hardee was, but and then there was a union. I don't know if it was Sherman or not, but there was a lot of growth. And, of course, there wasn't much left of the South.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
And I tend to think that after that, the idea of insurance protection was a lot more appealing, mm-hmm. having seen the devastation that the war brought.
Okay.
Not that it would have helped you out that much, because even life insurance today has a war exclusion.
Oh, I did not know that.
And they didn't have certain, like SGLI mm-hmm. for the servicemen's cover. But mm-hmm. and then if they weren't doing life insurance, it was just accident insurance. But mm-hmm. it became a very popular commodity. And I think if you looked at most of the money in Nashville, after the Civil War, you'll see with National Life and then WLAC.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
My dad was good friends with Jimmy Ward, and I remember him telling me a funny story. And they took the same tack. WSM, you know, they built the first, I think there were 2 radio transmitters of that size, one maybe on the other coast. And all of a sudden, they started this radio station, I guess for publicity, and the footprint grew exponentially to where southern Indiana mm-hmm. could hear it. It really started out not as a country platform at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, my great uncle, my grandmother's older sister's husband, was the first singer. He was a baritone from the Metropolitan Opera, Joseph McPherson, and he was actually the first one on the air. And it was kind of a variety show.
Oh.
So they really weren't sure which direction they were going to go with it. And having that footprint was mostly rural.
Okay.
So the country music mm-hmm. was what was getting the most votes.
Okay, and so it was WSM, and then Grand Ole Opry came later? Is that correct?
Yeah, it was. Okay. Well, it was, yes.
Okay.
And that, of course, stands for We Shield Millions mm-hmm. from an insurance standpoint. Jimmy Ward told me a funny story. I'm sure every salesman didn't do this, but they would go out and, you know, sell insurance door to door, and they would go back, like, every week or every other week for, mm-hmm. you know, the payments. And there was an insurance agent that used to go out on the night Grand Ole Opry played. Oh, and by the way, in the early days, the Grand Ole Opry opened with Live from the Athens of the South.
Beautiful.
Not Music City, from the Athens of the South, which, you know, the Parthenon. And
it's interesting.
Educational aspect of the country. But he would go out and at night and listen for people that were listening to the Opry, because no air conditioning, the windows are up. He would go back the next day. And they had on their jackets, they had a lapel that said WSN, Grand Ole Opry, National Life. And hey, Mrs. Jones, I'm Doug Smith from the WSN and Grand Ole Opry, National Life. Could I come in and talk to you for a minute? Oh, sure. Come on in.
That's just good business, I guess. You know what you're doing.
Creative marketing.
Very much so. Wow.
So, yeah, in WSM, they went a different direction, I think, into rock and roll.
Okay.
So that was, but yeah, publishing, you know, was we did do music publishing, but country music really originated out of East Tennessee more than anything else, in the Appalachians.
And there, of course, so if the WSM is older, then the Grand Ole Opry is the one celebrating their 100th anniversary this year. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That bounced around. It was the Belmont Theater at one point. I think it might have been in the War Memorial Auditorium.
I did read somewhere it was there. That's for sure. And then at one point, I don't know when it went to the Ryman, but it was there until... Was it the 60s or 70s? I can't remember.
Probably late 60s. Okay. I remember the lines as a kid. They used to wrap around the block down there.
That's crazy.
And then the recording business, you know, on top of that. But it's a very important component of our history, but certainly not the only thing the city's well known for.
Right, right.
Its educational institutions.
Right.
Were legendary.
And of course, aviation, which I guess we'll steer it back in that direction. Which is why with the whole talk with renaming the Nashville Airport BNA, which I don't know if most people know, of course, is named after Harry Berry, the guy that built it. I always think maybe they should name it after Cornelia, but then she's got her own. I don't know.
No, it's not an airport anymore. Another unsung hero is Walter Williams.
Oh, yes.
He came up through the 105th, but in the 30s, he put together an educational curriculum for young men to learn how to fly. And it became so popular, they would put out, it was a free ground course and so many hours, too, for free. And they would put these notices out, and they would meet in a gymnasium or some event center, and it would be packed.
Wow.
And so he created this model plan for the country to help train, because everybody knew what was going to happen. It was coming.
Yeah.
And Cornelia was one of the first picks when the Army Air Service, or I guess it was Army Air Corps by then, were developing this test program for women pilots. And I think she might have been the second pick.
I think that's what I read earlier today. She was,
And maybe the first six Corps.
Yeah.
And they wanted her to, okay, so she started flying in Nashville.
Out of Berry Field.
Then she went to Colorado and taught there, and then to Hawaii, where she was in the air when the Japanese hit.
Yes.
She was, if you look at the movie Tora, 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 it's got a much older version of Cornelia at a much higher altitude. She's training a pilot, and he's close to getting his wings, and there were a lot of other ones in the air. Two of them never came back.
Oh,
but
really?
Okay. Cornelia and the student pilot apparently were on their downwind leg turning base, which is right before you land. So they were probably 500,000 feet when they got shot at the first time.
Wow.
And if you think about it, that really makes the first American getting shot at World War II.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
she barely gets, you know, she gets the plane on the ground. They beeline it for the hangar. They strafe the plane. They strafed another plane the pilot, I think he was the squadron commander, shot him to pieces. Mm. And then, like I said, another, at least two more Cubs never came back. Apparently, mm-hmm. they used to train in early Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm. Goodness. I read, too, that when they got back, they landed, they got back into, I guess, the bunker. She told them guys that, you know, they're attacking Pearl Harbor and no one believed
her. Yeah. Until they saw the bullets flying.
Yeah. And then, and they said somebody else, I guess one of the people you mentioned that got shot, like that he was dead, that. Like, oh, I guess she's right.
Unbelievable. And, of course, she got a lot of acclaim when she came back here. I think there's a mm-hmm. picture of her with the WSM microphone in front of her. But they took a long statement, and she got a lot of attention on that.
Yeah, they said she, because of her experience, she went on tour to sell war bonds. Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I read that. That was very common. A lot of the...
Yeah.
Especially during the war, my cousin did that. It's a B-17 pilot. They would give him a break, bring him back here, and fly around the country.
Okay.
Promoting war bonds.
And then, so after, what did I read? She's trying to leave Pearl Harbor because they said that they had grounded all civilian air unless used for war service. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think I remember reading that. Also, there was a British operation, a ferrying plan for women to be used, and they mm-hmm. wanted her. She was like the first pick,
mm-hmm.
but she was out of the country at that time, and so she couldn't join that operation.
Okay. Out of the country, as in, so I forget, Hawaii was not a state then.
Yeah, too far away.
Right. Oh,
and
wow.
Not a state.
Yeah. It's interesting. So the connection we have with her, even though Special Collections actually has her papers, we have her will. Which I believe that's where I read she wrote the will before she came back from Pearl Harbor because she knew how harrowing the trip back was going to be. Because I believe the will is dated, I think it's January of 42, I believe, yeah.
Did you see the letter? I think it was the MBT show where they interviewed Tish Hooker. She's got the letter that Cornelia wrote her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And at the very end said, if I don't make it,
yeah,
you know, this was a great life and... She was prepared for whatever.
It's interesting that was saved. I wonder how much is included in her papers, because with the fire you mentioned at Fortland, I read that all of her diaries apparently went up. So all of her early years of her experience, her influence for this, we don't really know too much.
Yeah, I guess it's just the letters that were sent from her.
Okay.
But Tish Hooker. Mm-hmm. From my understanding, there's nothing in the museums of hers that I know of. The Tennessee State Museum does have a display. It's got a big picture of her and some commentary, but none of her gear. And I think I heard the family still has her personal effects.
Okay.
I would love to see that
in
a museum. You know,
definitely.
A bigger display at the State Museum. When I was in New Orleans, I guess it's two years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the first time, no, second time I've been there, but they had expanded and Tom Hanks just dedicated the last building, which included our women of World War II.
Mm.
Well, I go in there expecting to see Cornelia right there in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked and I looked and I spent an hour in there. I looked at all the films, all the displays. No Cornelia Fort. So I went to talk to three docents. I said, you guys are missing a big story here. And I put a suggestion in there, but I haven't been back since. Actually, I was thinking about going down there soon. The Facebook commentary that is going on right now, one of the ladies said that her understanding was that she is in there. So somebody probably read that or they figured it out. So maybe she is down there now, but her story really deserves more attention. And Wright-Patterson Air Force Base as well. Belmont University is very interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote a letter to the airport authority. I'm trying to create a groundswell to build interest to create a monument to Cornelia.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally a statue. Alan LaQuire, the famed sculptor in Nashville, already has her bust done.
Yeah.
And it's on a nose of an airplane. Mm-hmm. All it has to do is be cast. I'd rather see a full length. In fact, they said, yeah, we ought to have all six of these pilots on display in Washington, D.C., or at least the Air Force Museum in Dayton.
Yeah.
Texas has something.
Yeah, the state where she passed. I'm glad they do. But, I mean, the state where she was born, the city.
Yeah, it's between Abilene and Sweetwater. Sweetwater, I found out, has the WASP Museum.
Okay.
So that's I'm going there in July to see, do more research with them. The Fort family went down there 2 years ago for the anniversary of her death, which was the 21st of this month.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I read that there is some type of monument. I don't know if it's a statue, but there's something down there. I don't know if it's exactly where her crash site was.
Okay.
Or at the Women's Auxiliary Service Pilot Museum.
I see. Okay.
But she was actually a WAF. It's kind of interchangeable term.
Right.
Women's Auxiliary Ferrying Squadron, which was what she was doing when she was killed.
Right. They weren't actually in any kind of combat. She wasn't, no. I read a little bit about what ended up causing her crash, but I don't know if you want to tell the story per se.
Well, did you read the part about the gear being down on one of the planes?
Yes, because it said they were attempting to do something they weren't supposed to be doing, which was a coordination flight, or what was
formation flight?
Yes, that's what it was, yes.
Well, I don't know of a formation flight, and I've done a lot, that included the gear being down.
Right.
The gear creates a lot of drag in the airplane, decreases fuel and speed efficiency. They're ferrying, I think it was a BT-13 trainer that she was flying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guys had been picking on him already, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So factor that in. The guy that I think he collided with her, although they could have been hot dogging. These are pilots. That's what we do.
That's right.
So, but if his gear is down.
That is confusing, yeah.
That is suspect, and that would do a lot of damage in an air-to-air, especially if he was coming down on her. I think what happened was something penetrated the cockpit because she never got gain control. I think she was unconscious.
Oh, okay.
Immediately.
Mm.
And I don't know the exact altitude, but I suspect it had to be several thousand feet.
Okay. Yeah, it said that she spiraled out and crashed pretty strongly in the desert.
Merkel, Texas is the closest thing to the crash site. Haven't been there, but I'm going.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Well, yeah, it's amazing they've got something, but, I mean, like you mentioned, there's the air park, but it's no longer an airport. It was in operation till, what did I read?
The flood.
Yes, that's right. And now it's a part of Shelby Park.
Yeah, it was underwater up to probably about 5 or 6 feet in the hangars. And I'm sure air traffic control was always dicey, and the Nashville airport has expanded so much, it was... Mm-hmm. Probably a safety hazard.
Okay.
Being that close, but
yeah,
it's a beautiful greenway. Oh, yeah. Another story I read about her. She was coming in for a landing at Fortland, and flew underneath the train trestle.
Huh.
Now these are biplanes or single, you know, so they're a lot slower than a jet or something. But she flew underneath that, did a loop before she landed.
Oh my gosh!
And she was talking to the farm manager guy, and he's in the interview on MPT. She offered to take him up. He said, "Hey, no way I'm flying with you, little lady."
I would not either. There would be vomit all over the cockpit for me.
But she was a real tomboy. You see a picture of her standing on a horse, and she rode horses, and having three older brothers, what that's like.
Yeah, I read somewhere that they said when they were going to have her as a debutante or something, they were going to have her coming out party when she was 19. They had to bribe her to get her to go.
Yeah, she was 5'10" by age 13.
Oh, my.
And I'm sure was probably even taller. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of tall and lanky.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go to these Bellmead affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wanted to ask her to dance. And they finally had arranged deals.
Oh, geez.
Because that's a ritual they did, and she hated it.
I bet.
You can tell the look in her face that she just didn't want to be a part of that. and was really a rebel for her time. I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine if she hadn't died, what she would have gone on to do whenever they did establish the WASPs and whatnot.
But the role model.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to hear from other female aviators, especially some that are older, to get their take on it. I talked to a lady today that was very much inspired. She's a drone pilot, I think. She might be a pilot too, but anyway, she was like, I never heard this story. This is so amazing. And that's what this is all about, is inspiration. I mean, looking at these people, especially if you're lucky enough to have one in your family, thinking, this is amazing.
Right.
I mean, it really is something to be proud of and can change your course of what you think you can and can't do.
Right. That's true. Well, speaking of which, then, Cornelia Barksdale, can you tell us about her as another unsung hero?
Yeah, this came out of the same rabbit hole because I was kind of looking for my grandmother's part of this. Family story is, and this was in the paper after she died in 1977 that I'd never heard of, doesn't surprise me, is when she was 10 years old, about 1912, she was at Howard Elementary School, which is a different building than the one today, and she noticed that there were students that were hungry. And she saw a need. And I can see this in her at age 10, if you knew her. She was just an incredible, incredible lady. And the story is that she went to a father. He had a grocery store on Carroll Street, Kerr's Meats and Groceries. And she convinced him to give her food to prepare to take to school for these kids. That's where the story ends. So I started digging around, and I looked for news articles from that time. And if you go to newspapers.com, you'll see dozens of news pieces about Cornelia Barksdale. Cornelia Barksdale was from a good Southern family. I think her grandfather died at Shiloh, but she was one of the first, I think she was the last class before Hume Fogg. Her first year, she's teaching at Head Elementary School, which is in a different location, not too far from the current one. And she notices the same thing my grandmother did. And so she goes to Julia Green, who is generally credited for this, if you look at the marker on Hobbs Road. Julia was the superintendent that obviously gave her the go-ahead. But Cornelia Barksdale was the boots on the ground and the person that actually started this test. And she was teaching at Head School. Head School was primarily factory workers, so not... You know, not of much means, and which explains the reason a lot of these kids came to school without breakfast and no lunch. And so they prepared a hot lunch and made the news. And guess what? These kids they thought were stupid got smart and started doing well in school. And it was a big hit. But the city didn't fund it. I couldn't find anything in the Metro school budget until World War II. I have a hard time believing it went that long, but obviously for some period of time, it was donations from several companies that you might have heard of, and churches. They would do ice cream fundraisers, and these for not for all the students, but the kids that really needed it. She also pioneered medical care of some form or fashion. And this is all in the newspaper. You can read about it. Should have mentioned. She's the secretary of the suffragette chapter in Nashville. And we know how important that group was.
Yep.
The 19th Amendment wouldn't be there without
Nashville's
suffragettes. And she's in every social. You know, it's funny, you read those newspapers. They have birthday parties of five-year-olds and who was at the birthday party.
Oh, wow.
But they have everything, anything that happened. And she's, like, all over the place socially. And her friends are getting married. And I was like, when's she going to get married? Well, World War I breaks out. Guess who volunteers? She goes to France as, I guess, a nurse's aide or whatever they did. And I was like, oh, she's going to get married now. And sure enough, she met a career Army guy. And they got married. And so she never came back to Nashville as a military wife. There was one little hiccup that I think it was about 1929 that she files for divorce. Now, as a couple of any time, at that time was kind of scandalous, but for a career Army guy, it would have been a death blow.
Oh, really?
And so I think that had an effect, and they stayed married and never moved back here. But I would love to be able to get in touch with her descendants, because I know she had at least two daughters. And I think Texas maybe was one of the last locations.
Okay.
But she just disappears from the timeline after that.
Hmm. And what year did you say she was born?
I'm not sure about the year, but she would have been probably about 1900.
Okay.
She went to World War One as a volunteer, maybe, 1895 to somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Her father ran for sheriff using her name on the headline.
Wow.
She was so well known in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he won.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to have to go back and look at our records for that one then.
So, another, they're all over the place. And,
right.
You know, Jack Harding.
Yeah. Jack's story, right. I mean, that's something else in and of itself. Like you said, another podcast in and of itself.
Yeah, that's a mini series right there.
For sure, yeah.
But, the airport, you know, has a lot of country music history in it. I saw Uncle Dave Macon, who I'm related to. Interesting story on him. But nothing about aviation. I think they've got some stuff over in the administration side.
Okay.
But what a great display. I mean, those four individuals, and there's a lot more. The 105th Squadron has its stories, some of which are probably still classified.
Mm-hmm.
Operations, they started World War One, formed in Kelly Field, Texas, and then were established at Blackwood Field in Hermitage.
Okay.
Yeah, Blackwood and then McConnell Field, where McCabe Park is.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, to Memphis for a short period of time, Sky Harbor, Murfreesboro, and then to BMA. But their stories are, there's a lot of history there. They're the third oldest Air National Guard unit in the country, the oldest in the South.
Wow.
They're getting ready to move away from B&A again.
Again?
Back to Smyrna.
Oh, okay.
It's a drone unit now. They don't even have the hardware here. It's over there.
Oh, wow.
And they do real world operations.
My goodness.
I'm not sure if the 118th Wing, which is a bigger component of that, is moving over there as well, but it makes sense with the expansion of the airport.
Sure.
But and their name for the Andrew Jackson, the old Hickory Squadron, still 105th.
So where are you at in that process of trying to get the airport to for the bust of?
I did a general comments, and then I did an email directly to the president, and he got back with me very, very quickly, and actually he thanked me. For my research and said he was passing it on, I think, to marketing and who oversees their arts, because I think they have an arts budget for things, and it changes. And it wouldn't cost a lot of money, at least to have the bios with the photographs. And I've got the aerial mapping of 32 square miles of that area before, when it was all farmland, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Superimposed the airport on top of it.
Wow.
But a statue would really be the deal. And then you could do reproductions, one for Belmont, one for the air park, one for Texas.
Everywhere she had a footprint, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she was the first female killed in combat, correct? Was that the
combat, during wartime, it was the first active duty. She was actually a civilian.
Okay.
Oh, and here's another thing. But she was on active duty.
Yeah.
She was part of the war effort.
Okay.
For sure. But since she was not military, they didn't even pay for her funeral.
Oh, my goodness.
Or any of the other ones. I forgot how many were lost, maybe 30.
A part of that same mission? Or
no, just the general, the ferrying, because that's all they did was they would ferry to free up male pilots to go fight in the war. So they would transfer, you know, from like here. We had Vultee that built the P-38, the vintage bomber, a lot of other ones. That building is getting ready to be demolished for a new one. I got a chance to photograph that last year in 360, and I'll be able to release that once they get through with their process. But that aircraft plant was first in Nashville, maybe the first in Tennessee, but
It was built in 1940 as the Stinson plant became Volte, then Avco, and then Textron.
Mm-hmm.
It actually built part of our C-130 airplanes.
Okay. My goodness.
And unfortunately, Colemire is probably going to be lost. That's the mansion.
Mm-hmm.
Used to be New Orleans Manor. There's no way.
Monell's recently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no way they can fly to Japan without extending that runway.
That's what the runway will be for. I know they're expanding for international more so, but my.
Well, that'll be able. They'll have Frankfurt, and my hope is I'll get a direct flight to Prague to see my son.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah, it's just one of those things. It could be moved, but it is a reproduction from early 1900s.
That's right, because the original burned down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right, yep.
And then the Avco plant, I saw it. We had to wear respirators. It was uninhabitable.
Oof.
But we got some great pictures of that whole area, probably 256 aerials from the 30s of just the airport area. And we've got Fortland. You can see in the distance beyond the train trestle there at Shelby Park.
I'm going to have to look for that because now that I know where it was. And then did they ever say what caused the fire?
No, I never heard. But, gosh, there were so many in those days. With Yeah, I guess that, well, by then they had electricity. But I don't know. I don't think there was any suspicion. But it was devastating to the family, especially for her.
Yeah, she lost a lot of her, like her diaries, like I mentioned, and a lot of other supply or belongings that she kept there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodness. It would be a shame because, like I said, I can only imagine what those early writings would look like. So, but
yeah, she was very articulate from what I've read.
Yeah. Her will that I read through is, I mean, it's kind of the standard, but she goes into talking about she wasn't sure that her estate would be able to be separated from her father's estate. So if whatever was left over after anything, I guess, was taken, she wanted a scholarship named after her for, I think it was Girls in the South, maybe specifically for Sarah Lawrence if they wanted to attend there, but intellectual girls looking to do exactly, I guess, what she did.
Mm-hmm.
And then my favorite part of the will is her mention she wanted her dog, Kevin, to be taken care of.
Kevin.
I hope Kevin got taken care of.
That's great.
And I think she had a pretty good relationship with her mom because I know she came back and visited her a lot, or at least more so, I guess, because her dad would have been gone by then. So.
Yeah, he was really the rock of that family.
Yeah.
But the mom was a formidable personality, too.
She was, yeah. She was big into gardening, if I'm not mistaken. She was in the garden clubs here. She was on the founding board of the Children's Museum, donated a lot of money for that. So, she had, in her own right, she made her mark on Nashville history, too. Yeah,
I read that Cornelia had a very close relationship. I think it was the guy that was her flight instructor. And they stayed close for years, and they couldn't decide if there was a romantic component to it or not. But that was a big influence in her life, and I'd like to learn a little bit more about him. But these people were early pioneers. Nashville has a prominent place in aviation history, and there's a lot more to be learned, and I'm still going down a lot of my leads on some of this stuff. Let me look and see. Okay, it was, so she was the first female pilot in Nashville, first instructor. The second commercial rating for a female in Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
She got her instructor and her commercial within the same year.
Reading that. Yep.
Which is impressive. They were in a cadet plane. Why? On base.
I'm trying to remember some of the other details I read. Once she got out to Hawaii, she had an apartment near one of the big Waikiki hotels. I remember reading that. But I don't know. Yeah,
yeah. There's
something.
You know, in 24 years, she did a lot. But
she did.
That's how old she was, I think.
So I read she was born in 1919, and my brain doesn't math that well. But yeah, 23, 24. So yeah, okay. Yeah. I think that's all my questions. So is there anything else you wanted to wrap up with? Any other thoughts?
No, just you guys are a great resource for stuff. Even if you're just looking for your class yearbook, they're all down here.
Yep.
You never know what you'll find. And then you've got the digital archives that are expanding. And I know you guys are transcribing stuff all the time. So if you look a year from now, you might find something that wasn't there before.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got our new Ancestry partnership that's going to be starting, we hope, sometime this year. And we'll I'll definitely post more when we know what all is going to be digitized. But they gave us a healthy list of items, specifically the marriages, is something we really, really want to get digitized because that's our biggest request. So that's on our horizon, as well as the newest Metro Archivist will be announced soon. So
good.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a blueprint scanner. So
we
you
do.
Can do the big stuff.
Yeah, we're doing well.
Where all the fun is.
Yeah.
And AR, you know, you guys allowed me to do the first AR for a historical display. And I believe the Metro Historical Commission is currently, I'm hoping to assist them with Native American village sites in Davidson County. I think they picked six. And so where you could just whip out your smartphone or your tablet, hit a QR code, and boom, there's a village right in front of you where it was.
Fantastic.
Or the gunboat on the river that fought the Confederates.
Wow. So how technology meets history.
It really is crossing over into entertainment, I think, which is good for history.
Yeah, definitely it is. Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Bob, and thank you all for
Thanks,
listening.
Sir.